Welcome to the Verity Podcast for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024, where we separate the spin from the facts. I'm Melissa Topshire.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Here's a look at today's top stories. The UK passes its Rwanda deportation bill.
SCOTUS hears a U.S. homelessness case.
Five people are killed crossing the English Channel.
The EU Parliament backs a ban on forced labor.
Thousands protest Colombian President Gustavo Petro's social reform agenda.
Columbia University bans a pro-Jewish professor from its main campus.
A judge strikes down a North Carolina felon voting law.
Elon Musk and Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese clash over censorship.
A House Intel report claims the CIA mishandled sexual assault allegations.
And the EU investigates TikTok over an addictive new app feature.
Today's top story, the UK passes the Rwanda deportation bill. Here are the facts as agreed upon by The Guardian, DW, France 24, Independent, CNN, and Gov UK. Parliament in the UK on Monday approved a bill that allows the government to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda. The legislation is expected to receive royal assent Tuesday. The bill passed after the House of Lords decided not to table any further amendments after legislators in the House of Commons rejected its two proposed changes last week. The government is expected to, quote, get flights off the ground, with the first deportation flights set to start within 10 to 12 weeks. The bill, drafted in 2022, provides for asylum seekers arriving illegally in the UK to be sent to Rwanda. The government hopes that this will deter migrants from crossing the channel and stop human trafficking. However, Shadow Home Secretary Yvette Cooper said the Labour Party wouldn't carry out any deportations and would instead substitute the plan with cross-border policing and a new returns and enforcement unit. This bill comes after the UK Supreme Court called the Sunak government's plan unlawful last year. In 2022, over 45,000 migrants reportedly arrived in the UK via small boats, while net migration amounted to 745,000.
Thank you, Eric, for those facts. And on this show, we separate the facts from the narratives. We'll start this round of narrative spins with a right narrative from World News. Approval of this landmark legislation should be a relief for Britons who will benefit from a fundamental change in dealing with global migration. The Rwanda plan will deter vulnerable migrants from dangerous crossings and dismantle the business of criminal trafficking gangs. The Sunak government's victory will protect lives and make Britain safer.
And the Telegraph comes back with a left narrative. Although urgent action is needed to stop criminal traffickers and strengthen the UK's borders, the Rwanda plan is not the way to achieve that. This plan is extraordinarily costly and covers just 1% of people arriving in the UK, with no blueprint for the other 99%. Britain needs a proper migration policy, not another plan representative of the Sunak government's continued failure.
And we frequently offer a statistics-based nerd narrative from the Metaculous Prediction Community. And this one says there's a 96% chance that the UK will have a Labour government before June 2030. SCOTUS hears grants pass homelessness case. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, The New York Times, The Associated Press, and CBS. The U.S. Supreme Court Monday heard arguments in the City of Grants Pass, Oregon versus Johnson, a case which calls into question municipalities' right to ban sleeping in public during the U.S. homelessness crisis. A reported 256,000 people were without shelter in the U.S. on a given night last year. In 2018, representatives for homeless residents of Grants Pass challenged the legality of a series of ordinances the town of around 40,000 in southern Oregon began to intensely enforce in 2013 in response to complaints from residents about people sleeping and defecating in public. The plaintiffs claimed the town violated the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment, but Grants Pass disagreed on the ground that the amendment deals with punishments, not laws. The U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sided with the plaintiffs, but in Monday's arguments, the conservative majority SCOTUS seemed to be leaning toward a narrow ruling for the city along ideological lines. During more than 2 hours of arguments, the conservative judges questioned how far a city could go with its restrictions on the homeless and whether federal courts should be considering local policies instead of elected officials in the municipalities. The liberal judges' questioning centered around where people who could face punishment for sleeping on the streets would go if these laws continue to be in effect.
Thank you, Melissa, for the facts. And here we go with the spins, the first spin being a left narrative coming from NPR Online News. The conservative justices unfortunately seem inclined to side with the city in this case. Their questions seemed unsympathetic to the people involved, and they seemed inclined to let Grants Pass do what it wants, as long as it doesn't go too far. But the liberal justices rightly were more concerned that Grants Pass and every city could begin a banishment race to push homeless people out of their jurisdictions.
And here's the right narrative from PJ Media. The conservative justices aren't being cold-hearted. They're being realistic. The lower court ruling limiting how cities could manage their homeless problem wreaked havoc on the municipalities and made it unsafe for people to enjoy public recreation spaces. It's possible to be sympathetic to the homeless while also realizing that permitting bad behavior is harmful to society.
And the nerds from Metaculus say there's a 15% chance that the U.S. Supreme Court will see a change in its composition in 2024. Five people are dead in an English Channel small boat crossing. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, YouTube, Evening Standard, Reuters, and Twitter. French authorities have announced that five individuals, including a seven-year-old girl, were killed attempting to cross the English Channel on Tuesday. Speaking to the press, Pas-de-Calais Prefect Jacques Ballant confirmed that 112 migrants had attempted to cross the channel from the town of Wimereux at approximately 5 a.m. local time. The overloaded boat was reported to have hit a sandbank while also suffering engine failure a few hundred meters from land, according to Ballant. Alongside the child, the deaths of three men and one woman were confirmed. While 49 individuals were rescued, including four who were taken to hospital, the Coast Guard claimed that the remaining 58 individuals did not want to be rescued and continued to the UK after restarting the engine. Reacting to the news on X, UK Home Secretary James Cleverly stated that the tragedies had to stop, while claiming that the UK government was doing everything it could to end evil people smuggling gangs. In 2023, over 29,400 people attempted to illegally enter the UK via small boats across the English Channel, down from a record high of nearly 45,800 the year prior. The latest data shows that so far in 2024, nearly 6,300 have so far attempted to make the crossing.
Thank you, Eric, for those tragic facts. We'll start with narrative A from The Mirror. Despite countless attempts to convince Sunak and his Tory government that an expensive plan to send a small number of asylum seekers to Rwanda will not deter the tens of thousands who risk their lives to enter the UK, the Prime Minister continues to ignore reality. The longer the UK fails to confront criminal gangs and provide safe routes across the channel for those in need, the more migrants will die.
Narrative B comes from The Telegraph. Despite claiming they had never seen so many migrants on a single boat, French authorities were more than happy to escort 58 individuals across the English Channel. While an effective deterrent by the UK has yet to be established, reports imply that France not only made a minimal effort to halt the tragedy, but rather actively encouraged the misfortune.
EU's Parliament will pursue a ban on forced labor. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, Euronews, and Barron's. On Tuesday, the European Parliament voted on a motion to ban forced labor manufactured products. Legislators reportedly aim to prohibit imports from areas including Xinjiang, home to China's Uyghur Muslim minority, though China isn't explicitly mentioned in the law. The new law passed with 555 votes in favor, 6 against, and 45 abstentions. Before the new law takes effect in 2027, it must be ratified by member states. According to human rights groups, at least 1 million people, predominantly Muslim minorities, have been incarcerated in China's northwest Xinjiang province and have endured forced labor conditions. The law is aimed primarily against China as well as Turkmenistan. If the European Commission suspects slave labor in non-EU countries, it may conduct investigations and seek inspections. If evidence of forced labor is found, inspectors will reportedly confiscate the items at the border and compel their removal from the European market and online sellers. According to critics, the bill is less comprehensive than one in the U.S., which was adopted in 2021. The U.S. legislation prohibited products from Xinjiang unless companies could establish that their products did not include forced labor processes.
Thanks, Melissa. The first spin for this story is an anti-China narrative coming from Human Rights Watch. State-enforced forced labor is a huge problem all throughout the world, yet it is also extremely difficult to identify. This vital new law will provide the EU with the powers it needs to restrict imports and exports of forced labor items. It will allow the European Commission to identify high-risk economic sectors that employ forced labor, such as China's Xinjiang aluminum industry. This new law will help mitigate forced labor abuses throughout the world.
And the gray zone brings us a pro-China narrative. The Biden administration has accused Beijing of everything from the mass imprisonment of Uyghurs to forcible sterilization and genocide in its attempt to undermine China's economic rise. The main source for this misinformation is the controversial Xinjiang researcher Adrian Zenz with the right-wing Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. This is yet another trade restriction made to protect Europe's markets from Chinese goods.
You know, Melissa, the nerds were going to offer their contribution for this story.
Are they?
Yes. Yeah. They
Hooray!
Say, I know, right? They say there's a 50% chance that China will surpass the United States economically, militarily, and scientifically by February of 2062, Melissa.
Woo!
Crowds protest planned reforms in Colombia. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Daily Caller, Associated Press, Reuters, Colombia One, Breitbart, and Al Jazeera. Large crowds rallied across Colombia on Sunday to protest economic and social reforms proposed by the country's first ever leftist president, Gustavo Petro. While opposition politicians have declared that over 500,000 people took to the streets in Bogota and Medellin alone, Petro said attendance was about 250,000 nationwide. This comes as planned reforms in healthcare, labor laws, and taxation, which the government claims will benefit the poor and the country's economy, have raised concerns among several social groups, including healthcare professionals. Earlier this month, a committee in the Colombian Senate rejected the proposed health reform. A new version of the bill is expected to be proposed once the new legislative session begins in July. Petro intends to boost state control over the country's healthcare system in what he says is an effort to lower medical care costs. Following his legislative defeat, he ordered the takeover of two of Colombia's top medical insurers. Anti-government criticism, which has been frequent since the former guerrilla took office, has intensified after Petro suggested the possibility of calling a national constituent assembly to spur social reforms.
Thank you for that update, Eric. We'll start with a right narrative from the city paper, Bogota. Colombians have made history this weekend by taking to the streets in a peaceful and civic manner to express their dissatisfaction with Petro's leadership. As the nation worries about potential threats to institutional integrity and its hard-earned democracy, Petro must respect democracy and the Constitution.
Colombia News has the left narrative. Sunday's demonstrations weren't nearly as big as the opposition claims, and many of those in the streets were from other walks of life with their own motives. If conservatives and far-right parties are so confident that they have the people on their side, they should agree to a constituent assembly.
And the nerds are at it again from Metaculus, saying there's a 10% chance that Colombia will experience a civil war before January 1st, 2036. I don't know if they feel like, if they're saying there weren't really that many people and then under that story is a huge street full of people, like jammed with people. That kind of softens the point.
Yes, it does.
Colombia pro-Israel professors' campus access is restricted. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Colombia Daily Spectator, The Telegraph, The National Review, The Times of Israel, The New York Post, and Time Magazine. Columbia University on Monday deactivated the identification card of Shai Davidai, an assistant professor at its business school, in response to his plans to hold a protest on the main Morningside campus. The Israeli-born Jewish professor had planned to hold a, quote, peaceful sit-in in opposition to pro-Palestine demonstrators who have occupied the main lawn to demand Colombia support a ceasefire in Gaza and divest funds in Israel. Colombia Chief Operating Officer Cass Holloway said Davidai was prevented from accessing the West Lawn to maintain the safety of the Colombia community and could organize his event at a counter-protest area. Earlier, the assistant professor rejected the offer to hold a counter-protest in a separate area with the protection of public safety officers, calling it a, quote, continuation of 6 months of gaslighting and degrading the Jewish community. Last month, Davidai claimed, without providing details, that Colombia opened an investigation to allegedly silence him for his advocacy for the university's Jewish and Israeli community. Tensions at Colombia have been high, with students on both sides filing lawsuits against the school and the U.S. House conducting a probe into anti-Semitism on campus. All classes on the main Morningside campus will take a hybrid format until the end of the semester.
Thanks, Melissa. The first spin for that story is Narrative A, coming from Breitbart. Davi Dai is being punished for calling out Colombia's policies, which tend to favor support for the Palestinians and do little to address rampant campus anti-Semitism, limiting his ability to counter-protest while allowing the pro-Palestinian protesters to construct a tent city is a clear violation of Davi Dai's rights.
Here's Narrative B from Columbia Daily Spectator. Davi Dai isn't banned from campus. He's being restricted from certain areas for his own safety. By harassing students for their political views, he's violated university policies, abused his power, and posed a threat to the university community, attempting to ignite post-October 7 campus tensions. He was rightly restricted from the type of protest he was planning.
There's a 50% chance that at least 113,600 U.S. Jews will move to Israel by January 1st, 2050. That's the nerd narrative from Metaculus.
Coming home this morning, I got to sit in the dentist chair for several hours. Brush really well, kids, and don't eat a lot of sugar. Anyway, I was driving, and it was like 10:30 in the morning, and there was a big group of high schoolers on the sidewalk. And this is a pretty small town, like outskirts of Seattle, so not, like definitely not downtown.
Right.
Just like probably 60 of them going down the street with their megaphone. And they were having fun with it, too. They were kind of dancing around. Yeah, I was just surprised to see it in our small town, but there must have been a call to action today.
That's cool. The North Carolina felon voting law has been struck down. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Carolina Journal, News Observer, The Hill, and ABC News. A federal judge Monday struck down the enforcement of a North Carolina law criminalizing voting by people with felony convictions. In a 25-page order, U.S. District Judge Loretta Biggs wrote the law was, quote, enacted with discriminatory intent, has not been cleansed of its discriminatory taint, and continues to disproportionately impact black voters. The ruling can still be challenged in a higher court. The law, on the books since 1877, makes it a Class 1 felony in North Carolina for people to vote without having their rights restored. However, a law passed last year clarified that people who knew their rights had not been restored and still voted could be charged. In 2020, the North Carolina A. Philip Randolph Institute Incorporated and Action North Carolina challenged the law, arguing it was in contradiction to the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause and was directed at black voters. Biggs said her ruling aims to prevent the criminalization of voters who vote while mistakenly believing they're eligible to do so. However, those convicted of felonies are still ineligible to vote in North Carolina until they have finished their sentences.
Those were the facts, and here are the spins, starting with a left narrative from The Hill. This law's racist origins can't be ignored, and any ruling that reduces enforcement of it is welcome. Now, would-be voters can go to the polls a little less afraid to cast their ballot if they're unsure of their eligibility.
And the right narrative comes from the Heritage Foundation. There are so many valid reasons why felons should not be allowed to vote. Felons who attempt to vote before their rights are restored are committing voter fraud and should be prosecuted accordingly.
And the nerds have an opinion on this one, with the Metaculus prediction community saying there's a 70% chance that the Republican nominee for president in 2024 will win the battleground state of North Carolina. In Australia, Albanese denounces Musk in a censorship row. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, Forbes, The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, and The New York Post. The federal court in Sydney has temporarily granted Australian e-safety commissioner Julie Inman Grant's demand that social media platform X, formerly Twitter, block worldwide access to video footage of the knife attack on a Christian bishop in Sydney. The Elon Musk-owned company on Friday agreed to take the video down in Australia, but not globally, stating that it would challenge the broader demand in court. It also said it was threatened with a $500,000 daily fine for not abiding by the order. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese called Musk an arrogant billionaire who thinks he's above the law and common decency. Musk replied, "Does the Prime Minister think he should have jurisdiction over all of Earth?" A spokesperson for the e-safety commissioner said the order only applies to video of the violent stabbing attack, but not commentary, public debate, or other posts about this event. Platforms Google, Microsoft, Snap, TikTok, and Meta have already complied. Since passing its Online Safety Act in 2021, Australia has focused on holding tech companies responsible for the content they host for years. The government has blamed this video's circulation for the riots outside the church where the attack occurred. This is also the second dispute between Musk and government officials in recent weeks. Earlier this month, he refused to comply with Brazilian Supreme Federal Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes' order to take down certain X accounts.
Thanks, Melissa. The first spin is a left narrative coming from The Guardian. Elon Musk, who has banned the accounts of several journalists who criticized him, is clearly not a free speech warrior. What he actually is an executive willing to broadcast violent content to satisfy a fan base, even if it violates common decency and Australian law. Musk chose to take over a global platform, which means he must now account for the rules and laws prescribed to it by people who disagree with his definition of free speech.
And Sky News brings us a right narrative. Elon Musk's definition of free speech has given all people, no matter what government tries to censor them, access to videos of current events so they can decide what content they do and don't consume. It's the unelected e-safety commissioner, who also happens to be a disgruntled former Twitter employee, who wants to impose her woke agenda. Australia is being run by cynical authoritarians, but Musk has chosen to fight back.
The cynical narrative comes from ABC Australia. This tit-for-tat between a billionaire and a prime minister is disingenuous on both sides. While Australia's legal system seeks to develop a thoughtful adjudication on this matter, Musk and Albanese have chosen to butt heads over who's more powerful. The debate over online content is one of the most pressing of our time, but corporate and government entities are using the issue to gain popularity within their respective audiences.
And there's another nerd narrative from Metaculus saying there's a 10% chance that Elon Musk will become the first trillionaire.
According to the House committee, the CIA mishandled sexual assault cases. Here are the facts as agreed upon by NBC, Politico, CNN, and Fox News. A U.S. House Intelligence Committee report released Monday says the CIA has failed to properly respond to reports of sexual assault and harassment. In the report, lawmakers claim there were long-standing issues with internal reporting structure at CIA relating to sexual misconduct, adding that the process of reporting assaults or harassment was confusing and disorderly. The report goes on to say that victims were deterred from coming forward because they weren't provided anonymity. The House in January 2023 started investigating the CIA's sexual misconduct reporting protocols after a female employee claimed she was physically and sexually assaulted by a colleague at CIA headquarters. The investigation found that the male officer wasn't punished. The committee interviewed more than 20 CIA whistleblowers, reviewed more than 4,000 pages of documents, and held two oversight hearings. The CIA has implemented many reforms recommended by the committee, but Congress said it will continue to monitor the agency's progress.
Those were the facts, and here are the spins, starting with a narrative A from The Intercept. The secrecy the CIA values and needs to do its work can foster a dangerous environment, which is what several whistleblowers brought to Congress's attention. The House's decision to publicly investigate these allegations and the report the committee has produced show just how desperate reform is needed to prevent further disturbing and abhorrent actions at the agency.
Narrative B comes from the CIA. As the nation's top intelligence agency, the CIA is committed to transparency and an unrelenting pursuit to improve. To make sure these issues are addressed, the CIA is taking every step possible, including establishing a new office for sexual assault response and prevention, and working with outside directors to improve its processes. The past cannot be undone, but the CIA will correct its actions going forward.
The European Commission opens proceedings against TikTok. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Euractiv, CNBC, the European Commission, Shaping Europe's Digital Future, and Euronews. The European Commission has opened a second probe against TikTok under the Digital Services Act, or DSA, mandating the social media platform to provide proof of safety over its new task and reward program. A feature of TikTok Lite, available in France and Spain, task and reward provides users with monetary benefits for activities such as watching and liking content, following users, and inviting others to join the platform. Releasing a statement on Tuesday, the EC claimed that its investigation will focus on potential systemic risks of TikTok Lite's feature, citing negative effects on mental health and the promotion of stimulating addictive behavior. The EC announced that TikTok had until April 23rd to submit its risk assessment and until May 3rd to provide all other requested information. Social media platform has already failed to meet an initial April 18th deadline to submit a report concerning TikTok Lite's potential risks. If found to have not complied with the DSA, very large online platforms and very large online search engines are liable to fines of up to 6% of annual global turnover, as well as periodic penalties of up to 5% of daily global turnover. The EC also stated its intentions to suspend TikTok Lite's features as an interim measure until its safety is assessed. In a statement, TikTok claimed that it was disappointed with the EC's decision and that the program was neither available to children nor an unlimited service.
Thanks for the facts, Melissa. The first spin is narrative A coming from context. Big tech cannot be allowed to get away with producing intentionally addictive content with real implications for mental health. The DSA is only the beginning. Lawmakers throughout the world must take further steps to ensure that users are protected from exploitative algorithms and harmful content.
And here's narrative B from Reason. The DSA is an egregious example of government overreach. While it's admirable that the EU is attempting to set rules that could provide some order to the internet, these powers are a pathway to infringe upon the free speech of Europeans, to censor content on social media platforms, and to further control the behavior of individuals.
The nerds from Intaculous say there's a 27% chance that TikTok will be sold to a U.S. entity before 2025. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at Verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Melissa Topshire, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.